You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson from Austria for the second update for Bilderberg 2015. Mark, thanks for joining us again.
Great to be back, Dave. Plenty to report, including some interesting things from the American Friends of Bilderberg, an adjunct of Bilderberg, who are required to file tax forms. So we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, so we spoke yesterday at about 2:30 Central Time. It was a horrible day weather-wise. Did you get a chance to head out that evening, or did you get the bulk of what you're going to do done today?
It was this morning. After a couple really strong cups of coffee, I found a cabbie, like a godsend, who took me all around the security perimeter. We drove probably 30 kilometers. He didn't even charge me for most of it. He's a young man, very interested in what's going on. We checked both entrances to the Interalpen Hotel, where Bilderberg is huddling beginning tomorrow. But as I mentioned, they usually close the hotel down and kick everyone out on a Wednesday. They did it early yesterday before I even got here. This is the first time, regrettably, that I haven't been able to get in the hotel prior to Bilderberg getting in there. Some of that was some train delays and mix-ups, but all that being said, the security and visibility of where they're meeting is the most secluded that it's ever been in my experience covering Bilderberg since 2010. So getting any good photos or visual confirmations of people to compare to the official list of attendees is going to be much more difficult than in the past 5 or 6 years at a bare minimum. This is a very secluded place. You can't even see it from the regular ground level at all, let alone the fact that they closed off both entrances. And one of the entrances, they closed it off some 5-6 miles from the hotel, I'm told, and the other was 2 or 3 miles. So this is a really tough one in that regard. We did see where they had both military and police. The military had a rotating radar device. I was told that there's a no-fly zone, as is the case with the G7, which just met in southern Germany. There literally is a no-fly zone for part or all of the Bilderberg meeting in a certain degree of airspace. Today, the weather was much better. I talked to some hotel people and townsfolk here in town, and a lot of people are aware of the meeting. They're a little puzzled what it's about. I've handed out a lot of copies of AFP front pages that give them information. Some of those I've posted in windows have been taken down. Others have not been taken down. The Swiss activists are getting here, some of them, a little bit later than they would have liked. They'll be here in about an hour. I did understand that some We Are Change people went in the hotel a couple of days before they closed it down, but I don't have any firsthand information on that. But that's where we're at in terms of feet on the street. There's more in-depth matters, of course, that we can talk about.
Tell the listeners about the actual drive, the almost 20-mile drive that you took. What were some significant things that you noticed?
Well, one was the rotating military radar in a fenced-off area, a makeshift fence that was put there temporarily that was painted the battle fatigue green and spinning around in operation with a well-armed but friendly soldier standing there with his fully automatic weapon. I talked to some police. I always give police copies of AFP articles. It's a tradition because most of them are working class people that really don't care for this except they get paid overtime. And so they just sit on their duffs and get paid overtime. And I explained a little bit about Bilderberg, gave these articles to the police on the backside of the Hotel Interalpen where Bilderberg is meeting. And they confirmed that Austrian taxpayers pay them overtime to do this. Bilderberg, of course, pays for its own private segment of their overall security, but then taxpayers pick up at least part of the bill to pay their police overtime to cover this. But clearly, it's a problem either way. Even if Bilderberg reimburses public authorities, there's a problem because then it's as if they're buying those public authorities. And if they're not reimbursing public authorities, then the taxpayers are footing the bill. But it doesn't wash either way because one way Bilderberg is buying them and buying their allegiance in a sense, and the other way they're sponging off of them, off the taxpayer that supports the police. The bottom line is police are not designed to provide private protection for exclusive groups. That is not the purpose of police forces.
Yeah, the stated purpose. Before you get into some of the more sordid details of our friends there at Bilderberg, I just want to read something here from Jim Tucker's Bilderberg diary. We mentioned yesterday, chapter 7, this is 1988, that's when they were there. Don't know if it was when they were there last, but at least that's when they were there at that same location, that same remote location. And this is interesting here because this might be something that you're going to be coming up against or something you have already experienced. This was June 2nd to the 5th in 1988. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, like you said, this is Thursday through Sunday. It says the Bilderbergers mapped out their strategy protected by armed guards who patrolled the only entrance of the Interalpen Hotel that sits above the tiny town of Telf, 16 miles from Innsbruck. Most, perhaps all, Bilderberg participants arrive by helicopter. The only other access is a 2-lane road that circles the mountain to the top.
Right.
The road approach to the luxury resort built 2 years previously, that's 1986, was marked by a little coffee shop. During the Bilderberg meeting, it was the only place in the entire complex where the unwashed multitude could enjoy refreshments. From the site of the coffee shop, it was necessary to drive 300 more yards to the mountain peak, where the Interalpen was situated. There, armed guards patrolled the only entrance, which was fortified with a guardhouse. The site selection was another manifestation of the Bilderbergers' determination to keep the fact of their meeting an absolute secret. Knowledge of their meeting was on a need-to-know basis, and these insiders were sworn to secrecy. Disinformation was also used as a secrecy weapon. "What do you want here?" the grim-faced uniformed guard asked, stepping outside his guardhouse. "I've got an American tourist who wants to go to the bar," replied the driver. Both spoke in German. The driver translated for the tourist. The tourist, this rider, was identified as Sam Davis. "Just a moment, I have to ask," the guard replied. Stepping into his guardhouse, he picked up the phone and was engaged in heavy conversation for more than 2 minutes. Returning to the car, he spoke sternly. "It's impossible until the 5th of June," he explained. "That's the date when the car can come back and you can have a look at anything." The driver asked for the sheriff, chief of security. "I haven't seen him yet," the guard responded, "but very important people are here, and it's really impossible to go." Nothing's changed since 1988.
What has changed is they've moved the entrance guardhouses to where you can't get to that coffee shop. Keep in mind that this is the 2001 post-9/11 days. The idea of security has become more hyperactive. So you can't get to that coffee shop. I can't even tell where it exists. So Sunday after they leave, I will follow said route. And it must be that back entrance, I suspect, where I did talk to police today and gave them those articles. And they saw me taking pictures. And they did indeed come out and ask me what I was doing. That's when I gave them the articles and killed them with kindness, which is the best way to treat them 9 times out of 10 in this case. Their tightness of security has only increased, even as they try and be more quasi-transparent, they claim, through their website, which of course was created well after 1988, probably created 3 to 5 years ago. You know, things have changed a bit, but the more they change, the more they stay the same. Yes, helicopter is often used to frustrate people with cameras looking for those ubiquitous black sedans that they typically come in on. It would have been tough yesterday with heavy fog over the Alps and some misting and whatnot and bad visibility. I, of course, having some reporting duties, haven't been able to camp out there yet, but beginning later today, there's going to be more observation. There's an activist campsite set up, I'm told. So later today begins more of a sustained observation of what's going in, what's going out to the very best that we can.
But compared to the last couple of years, and this is your sixth Bilderberg.
Right.
Compared to the last couple of years, which were kind of circus-like, and there were a lot of protesters. Have
Yes.
you seen any protesters?
No. When we went to both sites today during beautiful weather, about 10 in the morning local time, 10:30, at both entrances, there was none whatsoever, which is unusual. They were there in Spain in 2010, a day or two ahead of time, already drawing things on the sidewalk with chalk, making effigies of leaders, very passionate stuff that got the media in Spain to pay attention. You know, if you carry a placard and start protesting, the media pays a little more attention, regardless of your ideology. We'll see if that changes today with the arrival of some of these Swiss activists. We'll give you an update on that. But so far, we're seeing a decline in European coverage and a decline in activism.
Wow. And of course, today is the 10th. It begins officially tomorrow.
Right. So there's a chance of things turning a corner, but that's as of today.
What do you have planned for later on?
That, precisely that, to try and assess where we're at once the Swiss guys get here, where we're at in terms of people observing, cameras at the ready, looking for anything we can do to identify if any U.S. presidential candidates are coming, since USA elections is one of their admitted topics this year, and anything that would shed light on whether their attendees list is accurate or incomplete or whatever the case. The field work really begins in earnest this evening.
You're going to need to be kind of James Bondish, it seems. I mean, this thing is almost impregnable, it appears.
They're the ones that are like, you know, Dr. Evil. You know, they're probably in there petting cats, right? Like
right.
Dr. Evil.
Like Blofeld. Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
They're almost beyond parody, you know? It's like, you know, we have a plan. Well, is it evil? Well, yes, it is. Well, okay, then we'll do it. I mean, I hate to belittle it, but I'm not. But you got to have a little fun with them because they just set themselves up for it. Moving on, I do have some rather notable things to build on our discussion yesterday regarding the American Friends of Bilderberg.
Great. Let's hear it.
Well, not that this stuff is digging 100 feet underground and coming up with Bluebeard's diary. It's interesting to note that the American Friends of Bilderberg is this adjunct, you know, kind of like an American Legion has the Friends of the American Legion in your local community.
Right.
Well, Bilderberg, being these homey, folksy guys, has a Friends of Bilderberg, an American Friends of Bilderberg. I've got some of their required 990 PF tax forms, which are required for tax-exempt charitable trusts, tax-exempt private foundations like that under the IRS code. I've got 2008 here. I've got 2013 in front of me. And what's interesting is a little bit of name-dropping here. For example, James A. Johnson, who has been listed by Tucker and me as being with Perseus LLC. Well, Perseus LLC undergirds the American Friends of Bilderberg Incorporated legally. They have an employer identification number here, like any business would, or foundation or what have you. And James Johnson is not only a common Bilderberg attendee, but he's on their select steering committee that is, probably 30 names or so. And they're the ones that get together to brainstorm what they're going to talk about and where and when they're going to meet. And so the names I was talking about yesterday that are on the Bilderberg Baird article posted on the AFP website right now, we talked about significant American attendees like Richard Pearl, James Wolfenson, and the Carnegie Endowment's Jessica Tookman Matthews. Well, it just so happens that on the 990 tax form, the most recent one I have is 2013, we see Jessica T. Matthews, James A. Johnson, and Richard Pearl, the neocon Zionist war hawk that's at Bilderberg all the time, and our friend Klaus Kleinfeld, who's with Alcoa. And with Alcoa, he's part of the Business Roundtable. Klaus attends Bilderberg every year, and the Business Roundtable is bending arms right now, as I mentioned, trying to get the rest of the House of Representatives in the U.S. in line to support Fast Track for the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Partnership. And keep in mind that the transatlantic deal is part of the whole idea of a Atlantic Union, just as the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is part of that building block called the Pacific Union, which Tucker often talked about in his book. And these big unions are the precise building blocks of a world government, a world federation. Many of the people that are with the American Friends of Bilderberg that I just listed are the chief American attendees of Bilderberg, and Johnson is on the steering committee, Klaus Kleinfeld is on the steering committee, Richard Pearl is on the steering committee, Jessica Tookman Matthews is on the steering committee, and another American Bilderberger that I mentioned in my article, Marie Jose Kravis of the Hudson Institute, is also on the steering committee. So they're not only common American attendees, but they're on the steering committee, and for a group this exclusive, only 140 or so from North America and the U.S., to be on their steering committee is hyper-exclusive. That's a very big deal. It gets even more interesting on these tax forms. It's true that none of them are compensated. For instance, Marie Kravis is the president and director of American Friends for Bilderberg. James A. Johnson is the treasurer. Jessica Tookman Matthews is the secretary. This is as of 2013. Henry Kissinger's in there too, your friend and mine. It does say that they're not paid for this. Of course, people that wealthy, either themselves or through their foundations or their companies, whether they're paid by the American Friends of Bilderberg or not is really kind of inconsequential. But that's what they filled out on their form. Here's where it gets interesting as well. Little things mean a lot, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, sometimes little details, you know, Sherlock Holmes could see a candle holder out of place and solve an entire crime.
Right.
Maybe this isn't that significant, but on page 7 of a typical 990 PF form, Paul Frank, 990 PF, there is one box where it actually asks them if they engage in propaganda to influence legislation, which is a typical standard question on a 990. They say no. Of course, that's not really true. Even if Bilderberg doesn't, the building blocks of Bilderberg do. It's all semantics. Those building blocks being the Carnegie Endowment, the Brookings Institution, the spokes that go to the hub of Bilderberg. It's a matter of a shell game and shifting where the influence comes from. On page 7 of all these 990s, and I have four different years, it says the same thing in part IX-A, because it does ask, list the foundation, that's the American Friends of Bilderberg, four largest charitable activities during the tax year. Charitable activities. And here's what Bilderberg put in the form. The entity, that's the American Friends of Bilderberg, organizes and sponsors conferences which study and discuss significant problems of the Western Alliance. It also collaborates on the Bilderberg meetings held in Europe and North America. Now, that sounds really innocuous at first, but think about this. It also collaborates on the Bilderberg meetings. So the American Friends of Bilderberg, separately from the Bilderberg meetings, quote, organizes and sponsors conferences. That means other conferences besides Bilderberg, which study and discuss significant problems of the Western Alliance. So what that suggests strongly is that the American Friends of Bilderberg has other conferences besides these annual Bilderberg meetings that deal with these so-called problems of the Western Alliance. At least on the surface, that seems to address the long-held suspicion that there's more to Bilderberg than just the Bilderberg meetings.
Like?
The fact that the American Friends of Bilderberg is talking about other conferences. Now, it's just a question of which other conferences. We have the annual Trilateral Commission, the main meeting every year, plus they have regional meetings in North America or other parts of the world. It's just a matter now of identifying as factually as possible what these other conferences are. I think Trilateral, in my opinion, is one of them. We also have conferences sponsored by the most significant think tanks represented at Bilderberg, which would be the Carnegie Endowment, where Jessica Tuckman Matthews is the president and a Bilderberg steering committee member and regular attendee. We also have the Hudson Institute, that's Marie Kravis. We also have the Brookings Institution, perhaps one of the most influential of all the think tanks in the world, represented at Bilderberg virtually without fail. So these tax forums are pointing another way down the road besides just the annual Bilderberg meetings. And they're boring to read. They're kind of long. It's a lot of nomenclature, a lot of just data or blank spaces where things are not applicable. But this is a significant clue that there's more to Bilderberg than just their annual meetings like the one I'm covering.
Mm-hmm. Who is this Jessica Tuckman or Tuchman Matthews? I mean, besides being on these organizations, boards and so on, and deeply involved in these globalist groups, who is she? You know anything about her?
Admittedly, not a great deal about her personally. I've been working more kind of horizontally than vertically, trying to connect more and more of the names that feed into the Bilderberg network and the organizations of people, as well as business entities and foundations and institutes and think tanks. You got to draw a lot of lines and connect a lot of dots to get that bigger picture to show that, you know, Bilderberg is part of a network. It's not something that's just an island unto itself. Although, again, every indication by Tucker and me and others that have looked into this is that it's the hub and the others are the spokes. Of course, there may be things more powerful than Bilderberg. We've heard about things called the Committee of 300. Of course, Bilderberg's the committee of only half of that, 140 or 150. And then the Bank of International Settlements, the central bank of the central banks based in Basel, Switzerland, really is pretty impenetrable. I think a lot more needs to be done with that. It would be too much speculation to say right now that I can tell you a lot about Jessica.
Okay.
I would need to read up more on her as a person.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at from your article here, there's a link to her at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace,
which was investigated by the Rees Committee in the 1950s for agitating for war.
That's perfect. So she was the director of the Council on Foreign Relations Washington program.
Right.
And a senior fellow, whatever that means. I love that. Fellow, senior fellow. From 82 to 93, founding vice president and director of research of the World Resources Institute, an internationally known center for policy research on environmental and natural resource management issues. Ah, here you go. She served on the editorial board on the Washington Post, covering arms control, energy, environment, science, and technology. She wrote a column for the Post. Going back from 77 to 79, director of the Office of Global Issues at the National Security Council. She's one of these well-connected, probably Zionist, Jewish, I would imagine, neocons.
There's a lot of neoconservatism there, you know, with their topics this year, including Russia and Iran. Those are separate topics among the 16 topics they're discussing this year, according to their press release. And that's the longest number of items I've seen. Going back 2, 3, 4 years, they had no more than 11 or 12, something like that. When she talked to Charlie Rose recently on that Bilderberg member, the PBS TV host, Charlie Rose, even he's a Bilderberger. She talked to him and referred to Vladimir Putin as a bully recently. And of course, a rather jaundiced view of Iran. It all fits in the neocon mold that Israel can do no wrong, and that at any moment, Israel is quaking in its boots because of its archenemy Iran ready to bomb it off the face of the earth. When Israel holds all the cards in terms of nuclear weapons, just like the U.S. does, the hypocrisy is just unfathomable. Yeah, Jessica's pedigree, like a lot of these people at Bilderberg, is full of accolades and, you know, certificates and the undersecretary of this and the former this and that. But that part about the Washington Post is very common with Bilderbergers and trilateralists and others that are in this little constellation of groups. Often they're on or used to be on editorial boards. So we see that interchange with the media and therefore why the media is relatively silent, especially in the States, about Bilderberg.
Yeah, just one last thing on her, besides having some relatively famous parents, and she is fully Jewish. Her maternal grandfather was banker Maurice Wertheim. And this guy was an investment banker, chess player, chess patron, environmentalist, there you go, and philanthropist.
Yes.
So Maurice Wertheim, and he passed on in 1950, and he actually founded this Wertheim & Company, which is an investment firm, and it was acquired already. But at any rate, she comes from a long line of these financial types, so there you go.
That's the common pedigree of most right. Bilderberg attendees, unless they're a one-timer like former Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, who I believe attended one Bilderberg meeting, and then he's been at some trilateral stuff. After he left there, he got a nice posh job as president of Purdue University, probably a reward for good behavior. As I prepare to go out in the field, the other thing to do is come back here to my makeshift office and, like you're doing, keep digging into who these people are, how they interconnect, they and their groups, and discern, as we did yesterday on our first podcast, citing Martin Wolf's writings in the Financial Times. He's a longtime media Bilderberg attendee, you know, discerning what they're talking about, their fear that Greece will leave the Eurozone and drop the euro, go back to the drachma, their fear of Britain leaving the EU, Brexit, as they call it, and the fear that this European integration that Bilderberg has stumped for so many decades might unravel under populist passion or resistance, because ultimately populism is more powerful than they are. I think they know that. So we're just keeping our nose to the grindstone with these guys.
Yeah, well, that's all you could do.
Right.
And by the way, Wertheim & Company changed over to Salon Smith Barney and later Citigroup. And there you go, getting back to Citigroup. And it's all tied in, like you were saying.
Yeah, one fish eats a smaller fish.
Yeah, right.
It's a whole network. You know, what we're looking at here, Dave, is people that are trying to build a whole different governing structure than what we would normally think of as government. You know, they want privately held water, privately controlled usurious money, private armies, private prisons. Dick Cheney has been involved in financing and being an investor in private prisons. You know, you've got people that view the world as their oyster and the rest of humanity as mere chattel and goyim and capital to be expended or discarded, whatever the case might be.
Exactly.
I saw an interesting movie on the plane that I think enunciated the Bilderberg philosophy. There was these tyrants that kind of owned the universe or the solar system under a kind of Bilderbergish ideology. The movie's called Jupiter Ascending. It's a pretty new movie. And there was this commander of this alien race that reportedly had been involved with earlier efforts to seed humanity. The notion was that humanity was seeded from an external source and placed on the earth. And it doesn't matter whether listeners believe that or not. That's not the point. But this commandant said the following: to live is to consume other people who are a resource to be converted into capital for profit.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, and then he went on to say, every human society is a pyramid, and some lives will matter more than others.
Mark, thanks for checking in again, and looking forward to the next update. I guess we might talk later on tonight or tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I got to get out in the field. The weather's good, and see what can be seen here, and try and revive some of the activism. I do understand, a quick report, is there supposed to be an organized protest here in Telfs on Sunday around 2 o'clock local time. Probably will take the G7 into account. There were some protesters up there this past Sunday and Monday in southern Germany where the G7 was. And I'll mention that at least two of the G7 topics, if not more, Russia and Greece, carried over to Bilderberg.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you, Dave.